much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we are so happy to be with you, as we always are. We've been doing our show here on Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network, since the inception of the network, as a matter of fact, as well as doing so many things in natural medicine. For instance, many of you always make comments on our radio shows, of course, right here. It used to be radio shows, now they're podcasts. I wonder what the difference is, not really sure. But also Dr. Eugene Zamperone and I, my co-host here, he is Dr. Z. I'm the natural nurse and Dr. Z, and I'm Dr. Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And you can go to naturalnurse.com to find out how you can join us in many, many events, both online and in person. Coming up, we have thyroid, adrenal, pituitary, the sacred triune, herbal balance. And that is a 3 CEU course for massage therapists, acupuncturists, dietitians, nurses, midwives, nurse practitioners, or you can just take it for your own information. But if you are a professional and need CE credits, you can take any of our classes, and you can find them at naturalnurse.com calendar. We're also involved in the American Herbalist Guild 31st Annual Symposium with Tirana Lodog, my colleague and friend, and she will be the keynote there, and I'm doing, as part of that whole symposium in Stories That Heal, we're going to be doing one specifically on herbs for elders. Then we have one coming up called Opiates, the Problem and Natural Solutions, and Herbs for the Spiritual Season. Also, in addition, we have ongoing private classes on over 1,000 topics in natural medicine. One leads to something called the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Course. That's a 4-class series. And then we also have mentorship to become an RH. An RH is a registered herbalist. So if you're wondering if you'd like to make natural your living in terms of what you're doing professionally, we have a class called Career Paths in Natural Health. And that's the first class that many people take to see what direction could they go in to incorporate making their earnings in the world through doing something natural. And sometimes that's a real surprise, because when we review someone's strengths and trainings already, I have found, for instance, someone who was really a fantastic graphic designer, but was very unhappy and thought she wanted to go into being a health professional and maybe a health coach, where she talks to people. You know, I'm not a really big fan of that path, although if you choose it, it's fine. It's just a difficult one, because health coach is not a license. So many people take that and then they find they actually can't really do it enough to the point of where they can support themselves. But of course, if you have a license, such as an acupuncture license, then you can. But this person, who is an excellent graphic design artist, I actually moved towards using those same skills, but within the natural products industry. So now she is still a specialist in terms of graphic design, but she's working at a company that offers herbals and nutraceuticals. So the daily conversation is all about that. And she feels totally supported and so much happier in her life, and is actually earning a higher amount as well. So there's all kinds of possibilities. Everyone can actually move towards having a profession that has to do with natural living. So you can get in touch and set up that course for yourself if you're so inclined. You can go to naturalnurse.com. And also, we have lots and lots of free information, articles, podcasts, media, etc. And today, we're so happy to have as our guest, in fact, an acupuncturist, as we were talking about, who is Bridget Shay, and she wrote a beautiful book that I have in front of me called Cultivating Your Microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese Practices for a Healthy Gut and a clear mind. It brings in so much information about how to feel really well. Brigitte Shea is a licensed acupuncturist and herbalist, author, and wellness educator with over 20 years of experience in the holistic healing arts. Her private practice is integrated and involves energetic, Chinese, and Ayurvedic medicine. And she enjoys teaching workshops on Eastern wisdom and energy healing, and is also the author of a book called Handbook of Chinese Medicine and Ayurveda. So we're talking about her new book now, Cultivating Your Microbiome. Thank you for joining us today, Brigitte. Or is it Brigitte? Tell me the right way to say your name.
Brigitte.
Brigitte, just plain Brigitte. Okay, more an American pronunciation.
Yes.
Thank you for letting me know. And what led you back in time to your path of study?
Another lifetime. I did a study abroad trip to Greece, and we ended up going to the Temple of Asclepius in Epidaurus, in old Epidaurus. And I was fascinated by the fact that people would go that had whatever going on with them that needed healing, and they would sleep in the dream healing clinic and receive messages from spirit through their dreams as to what they needed to do to heal themselves, and if they weren't going to be able to heal themselves, what it stemmed from, and how they could live their life to the fullest regardless. And I found that fascinating because I had always been a vivid dreamer. And also the fact that it was, you know, Greek civilization is considered like the foundation for Western civilization today, and the fact that they had this practice that was so widespread in the ancient world, and what I felt so relevant to what we experience even today, I wanted to pursue learning more about that, about the mind-body connection and our connection with a greater sense of well-being and awareness. And fast forward a couple of years, and I was working in a shop, and one of the gals in the shop I worked with used to get migraines, and the other gal I was with was like, well, come on over here, I'll do some Reiki on you. And she started to do Reiki on her, and within a matter of minutes, her migraine was gone. And it just seemed like magic to me that something like that could happen, and it seems so completely realistic and natural and achievable. So I started my path in the energy healing world, and from there ended up spending some time in India studying yoga, and then at Chinese medicine school, and now here I am.
Well, that's a beautiful path. And I think, you know, have you found that your conventional studies, such as studying at SUNY Albany, and you have a master's degree from Seattle Institute of Oriental Medicine. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that is more mainstream kind of study. Do you find that fits in with your more esoteric aspects of your interests and your profession?
I feel like it fits beautifully because they're all on the same spectrum, right? Nothing is disconnected from anything else. So from my point of view, when we have something manifest in the physical body, it's not just a physical thing. It's not just that, you know, we need to replace the catalytic converter. It's that the body is this complex, multidimensional force of nature and an aspect of nature, and that there is the physical body, there is the emotional and mental body, there is the aspect of us that is sort of our center, our intuitive sense of wisdom, and then there is that aspect of ourselves that we may call the soul, depending upon what tradition you're in, or the consciousness, and that can be something that is local to the body and something that is all-encompassing and connected to everything else that is. So it's not like, for me, the esoteric is necessarily completely separate from the more mundane as we might look at it, but instead they're just other facets of reality that if we have a grounding in one, we can see how it influences and manifests in the others.
I believe that myself. And you, my practice also is very much integrative, where I use all different pieces of knowledge that I've been accumulating. I actually started practicing in 1964. So that involves a lot of different roads, like yourself. Rather than saying only this can work, you're bringing in concepts which are very compatible, such as Ayurvedic and Chinese medicine.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, and then you teach from what you know, too, right? And you practice from what you know. So it's not that you necessarily need to go out and learn every single thing, but it's like once you get a firm enough grounding in a system or in a process, then it's like you can embody that teaching and apply that and understand the other teachings even better that you become exposed to as you go along in life. And then you can use all of that to share with others.
So just like you're talking about that, the really ancient teachings of Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, now you're bringing in something that's really, I mean, it's a new word, microbiome. We used to call it years ago, other things, you know, leaky gut was a big thing. So microbiome in terms of its use, not in the scientific community, but more mainstream, is rather new. And right. Yet you're bringing that in and linking it to these ancient systems.
Right. Because I think that a huge aspect of the ancient systems and a lot of the terminology that gets used in ancient systems that may make modern day practitioners and thinkers sort of poo-poo the ancient wisdom is the fact that they were using words to describe what we're finding now that the microbiome does. They were using words to describe things that up until now we didn't have the technology to see in a tangible, three-dimensional scientific way. So because we couldn't see these things for so long and understand them and recognize their activities and their importance with other functions in the body, it's like ancient medicine hasn't really been taken seriously. But if you look at the ancient teachings and you really read them with an open mind, you find that they're actually talking about the same exact things that people are winning Nobel Prizes over right now. The circadian pattern to one's daily living or yearly living. Different herbs that help to alleviate the like malaria, for example. Someone just won a Nobel Prize for that a couple of years ago. So it's like the more that we find out scientifically, I feel the more relevant ancient medicine becomes in a very practical way, because now that we see that everything we find out scientifically is actually already been talked about and in practice for thousands of years, maybe science can actually look to those ancient writings for guidance on how to perhaps steer their research in areas where they feel a little bit flummoxed.
You know, I really think that that is so true. And I want to remind our listeners that this is The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And our guest today is Bridget Shea. And we're talking about her new book, Cultivating Your Microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese Practices for a Healthy Gut and a Clear Mind. So one thing I find very interesting, like you said, when we look at traditional herbal medicine and we, you know, I have practiced and studied with so many indigenous healers all around the world, and whatever they say works, I definitely don't question if it works. Right. But what we often do then is bring that into the laboratory, and with scientifically relevant equipment that and understanding that we now have, we can look into, let's say, the mechanism of action of a particular herb, so we can now understand not that it works, but in addition, why and how on a cellular and molecular level. So that does not discredit any of the ancient knowledge. It really supports it.
I agree 100%. I feel like it validates it and supports it. Not that it needs validation, but I think it should be making people think the more we do support those teachings with scientific findings, that maybe we ought to open up a little bit more to understanding them and how they can be useful for us today.
Well, and I'll take it one step further. What I really love about the documentation is the fact that my goal, you know, as I go towards, like, I'm in the, towards the end of my life, right, not at the beginning, I really want to see evidence-based medicine being standard of practice. And what I mean by evidence-based is those things that have been used for thousands of years traditionally and are now so well documented, even such as acupuncture, mm-hmm. and that have an excellent safety profile versus pharmaceutical drugs, mm-hmm. and are imminently more cost effective. So it should be the first line of intervention for every patient all the time. And then there's always time for, you know, very strong pharmaceuticals and surgery when required.
Right. Like, there are a lot of people that have things happening with them that would be very well served by going the natural medicine route. And then even people who may require more comprehensive acute Western treatment, they also benefit from natural medicine used concurrently with that Western treatment. And that's the standard of practice in China. When it comes to Chinese medicine, that in many different disciplines in China, when someone's treated in the hospital for something, they're also treated with Chinese medicine and or with acupuncture.
Yes, absolutely. And they have better outcomes at a fraction of the cost.
Yes.
So yep. there you go. You know, yeah. The only one that stands to lose, not the doctors, they're needed, because they are actually educators in their correct role, versus someone standing in the corner looking at a computer and trying to find a code and never touching or smelling a client, which is what goes on. Right. And so they would be better served by that understanding. Certainly all of us as healthcare consumers, patients, and clients are better served. Mm-hmm. And so the only loser is the pharmaceutical sales. That's it.
Right.
So definitely your book can really bring that understanding to individuals. Now, how would someone start to consider that they may need their microbiome balanced?
If they don't feel balanced, if they don't feel like they're completely full of vitality, if they are having skin rashes or mood swings, or they don't have regular access to joy in themselves and in their life, or if they're not sleeping well, if they're having digestive issues, if they're having any kind of menstrual irregularities, all of these things are directly influenced by, and in some instances controlled by, the diversity and the health of one's microbiome. And in addition to that, researchers are now recognizing that autoimmune conditions are directly tied to the status of the microbiome.
That is true. So, boy, you just gave a whole long list of things mm-hmm. that I am sure not only just people, but doctors. I mean, if you have a skin rash, you brought up a skin rash, which is so closely linked to the microbiome. Where will people go? Are they going to their gastroenterologist for that? No. And if they do, they'll show him the skin rash and he'll say, go to the dermatologist. Like right. They don't even consider in mainstream medicine the cohesiveness of all the systems. Yet if you saw someone, and, you know, well, tell me what kind of client you might see that you would surmise it might be the microbiome. And how would you determine if, in fact, that is the case?
Well, for example, if someone does come in with some kind of a skin rash, I, as a Eastern medicine practitioner, I am always asking questions about the status of one's digestion and bowel movements and their metabolism in general, because as an Eastern medicine trained practitioner, that is like the nexus of where many other imbalances begin. And so we want to go to the root of where the initial disturbance might be coming from. And in the physical body, a lot of it manifests somehow in the gut. And so I might see somebody with a rash, for instance, who notices that it flares up when they eat certain foods, for example, or at certain times of the month. And so then from there, I would work with them to identify what the potential triggers might be. They may keep a journal and keep note of when they notice the rash is flaring. And then we can do an alteration of the diet and also an alteration in lifestyle. Lifestyle has a lot to do with the functioning of the microbiome. So we use the ancient medicine wisdom to help people align more with their own inner cycles, with their own biorhythms, with their circadian rhythm. And by doing so, that helps to bring the microbiome more into balance. And by alleviating some potential triggers from the diet, at least temporarily, we can then alleviate some of the acuteness of whatever they may be experiencing, may be experiencing like a rash, and start to heal the gut. And then from there, balance the microbiome.
And that's such a cohesive way to look at things. And, you know, it really was more present in Western medicine in older times. Like when you talk about body types, and I know you do, and you're really involved in the person, what's going on with them, both from the Chinese and the Ayurvedic dosha perspective. And Ayurveda, it's called doshas. But, you know, we did have in Western medicine the concept, which has really been lost, in terms of like the ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm kind of person.
Yeah.
So that was part. And, you know, doctors used to smell patients and take their pulse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when do you see that going on anymore in Western medicine?
You see it in Eastern medicine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other thing is tongue diagnosis, which would be something that even dentists might want to explore, because from the tongue, you can tell the quality of what's happening in the person's gut. For example, if someone has a very thick tongue coating, then chances are they do have some microbial dysbiosis in the gut. And that can be coming from the mouth, or it can be influencing what's happening in the mouth.
And let's talk specifically, maybe not everyone knows, what is the microbiome?
The microbiome is the conglomeration of all of the microbes. They can be archaea, bacteria, fungi, yeasts, viruses that live in and on the body that help to regulate our biological processes. Without it, we couldn't survive. We'd be like the boy in the bubble, and the second we left, we would start to degrade. So the microbiome is responsible for helping us to not only survive, but to thrive. And all of that microbial DNA and all of the metabolic byproducts that help to regulate our internal processes are all part of our microbiome. And we are actually half microbial DNA and half human cells.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's no one walking around that isn't loaded with these microorganisms. In fact, they just kind of live in that same body that, if you consider yourself a spirit, that you're inhabiting.
Exactly. And
so you're like roommates.
Yeah, absolutely. And symbiotic ones. So ones that work together and and help each other. There's basically a one-to-one ratio of human cells to microbes in the body.
That's pretty mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if people get skeezed out by that, you know, how should they repurpose that thought?
Well, it's going to, it pretty much requires a paradigm shift in how you think about yourself. So if you think that you're this human that is completely disconnected from nature, it's going to probably be a bit uncomfortable of a shift in thinking. We have to, I believe, start as a race to think about ourselves as nature, that each individual body is an individual manifestation of the natural world, and that we are intimately connected with it and part of it.
Well, those are beautiful thoughts, Bridget. And we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion about cultivating your microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese practices for a healthy gut and a clear mind with our guest and author, Bridget Shea. We'll be right back with more.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
More right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. Today, we are speaking with author and acupuncturist Bridget Shea. And we're talking about her new book, as well as her in-depth knowledge. And today we're talking about cultivating your microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese practices for a healthy gut and a clear mind. So thank you for joining us today, Bridget.
Thank you for having me.
So you talked a little bit about the fact that microbiome is pervasive. It's all through our body. And when it is imbalanced, it is linked to this long list of health issues people might experience, who I'm sure some people might have been surprised are all linked to that.
I think what probably surprises people the most is the link between the microbiome and how they're feeling mentally and emotionally.
And boy, oh boy, when people start to treat it effectively through some of the things that you recommend, like change in diet and recognizing what's going on, that change can be so dramatic, just dramatic. And I've seen people cry to even get an explanation. So often they have these symptoms, they may be vague, they may be not something that requires a medical diagnosis. So then they're given like anti-anxiety pills, which is completely inappropriate because they are not feeling well.
Right. And, you know, and like I said, in Eastern medicine, we take into account the status of the gut. And that means the status of not only the hydrochloric acid in the stomach or the bile produced by the liver, but also the status of the microbial balance in the gut itself. And whether the person is presenting with too much of some kinds of microbes and too little of others.
Yes, that's true. Now, how would we know that? I mean, I do know there are lab tests that can be done. You know, how would someone determine the state of their microbiome?
Well, there are many ways. You know, we get clues all the time from the body on what's happening inside of it and what to do, but we oftentimes don't listen very well to those. One of the simplest things that we can do, and I talk about this in the book, in fact, it has its own chapter dedicated to it, is to pay attention to one's bowel movements. And there's a chart in the book, the Bristol stool chart, and it shows what types of bowel movements there are and what those are considered as far as whether they're healthy or could be better. And what to do is, based on the quality of the stool from an Eastern medicine perspective, in order to help to bring those stools into greater balance. And by doing that, by being mindful of one's metabolic pattern, and by taking the actions that are recommended in the book, which are oftentimes very simple and very doable, one can influence their microbiome. So we may not be saying, okay, you need more of this strain or that strain, because actually we don't know all the strains yet. And we don't know what everything does, and we don't know how it interacts with each other, and we don't know how the interactions between microbes produce something that the body needs. We don't know everything about it. We're just at the tip of the iceberg with it. But from an Eastern medicine standpoint, we don't look at the microbes as particular strains. We look at them as different types of qi in the body, or vitality, or living forces. So we may look at something as more of a cold type of qi, or something as more of a hot type of qi, or something that presents as the vital fluids and the vital energies in the body stagnating in a certain area. And so we identify the microbial entities and their byproducts with those more generalized categories. And then we are able to then ameliorate the signs and symptoms associated with an excess of one of those categories through diet and lifestyle and potentially even supplementation.
So what you're talking about really is in terms of like taking tons of probiotics as a first step might not be the best thing to do.
Correct.
Which is really what many people do now. And also it's very interesting because there's a big promotion of one specific species or this whole massive amount of newly discovered species. But really, we're in such infant stages of knowing what you really pointed out, Bridget, which is these species change. First of all, they're metamorphic when they get into someone, and that's going to really make a difference in one person or another.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then I talk about also what the environment is. So as a host, what is your internal environment like? And, you know, if we take that into consideration, then we're able to have a better sense of what types of microbes will want to live there. So is your gut lining more swampy? Is it more hot? Is it inflamed? Is it cool? Is it balanced? Are all the cell junctions together? Is there a good mucosal lining? So really we're talking about the microbes and we're talking about ourselves as the host and what our environment is like. And so that is something that's also taken into account when you see an Eastern medicine practitioner or natural medicine practitioner, because they're looking at what your body is equipped to handle at that moment as far as change goes or as far as taking something goes, so that you're not taking something that may be appropriate 6 months from now but isn't right now because your gut lining's not intact. And what should we be doing now to make that gut lining a more habitable place for the beneficial microbes that we want to have thrive in that region?
That's a great point. And I do want to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we're speaking with author Bridget Shea about her book, which is a wonderful book. There's so much in here. It's, you know, very intense. You have wonderful charts. It's called Cultivating Your Microbiome. And she's explaining from the perspective of a knowledgeable acupuncturist and someone who understands traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, ancient medicine, and how you can go about discovering changes, simple changes that you can make to have your microbiome be in a healthier state. And what does that lead to? Really, a much higher level of health and happiness.
Yes, that's right. And go ahead.
So, you know, what are some of the first steps that someone could take to see if things might need to be more balanced?
So if you're noticing that when you eat, you get gas and bloating, or if you notice that you get nauseous easily, or if you notice that you get tired after you eat, or if you have irregular bowel movements, you know, ones that happen at different times of the day, or that lack regularity, or if your bowel movements are too loose or too hard or too dry, those are all indications that either the intestinal lining or the gut microbiome or both may be in need of some attention.
And what are some of the first steps that people can take? Because not, let's say if they come to you as a practitioner, that's one thing, because you can then step-by-step guide them. You can do acupuncture to help balance their energy fields. But in your book, you give some very specific steps that people can take.
Yeah. So in the book, I talk about the different metabolic types that are associated with the different mind-body types in Eastern medicine. But some very generalized things that we can all do, regardless of which type we fit into and what our stool looks like, are to have more regularity with our daily routine. So I like to describe the body to people and the microbiome as part of the body as looking at, like, if we look at our bodies as a beloved pet, like we just got a new puppy, for example, and our body is like that puppy, and it responds to regularity. It will tell you when it's time to eat. It will know when it wants to go out. It will know when it needs to sleep. And by providing a regularity in our daily patterns, we are setting our body up with a really good foundation for microbial diversity. And the other thing that we can do is to make sure that we're getting really adequate sleep. A lot of us may stay up on devices late at night, and ideally we want to be in bed earlier than later. Every hour of sleep before midnight is like 2 hours after. And so, every hour before is like 2 hours. So if you go to bed at 10, it's like you're getting 2 hours of sleep from 10 to 11 as opposed to, say, from 1 to 2. And being asleep in the early morning hours is very important because the body is on a circadian rhythm, and that includes what the microbiome's doing. And the body detoxifies itself naturally in those early morning hours. So if we're asleep by, say, 9 or 10, then we're usually deeply asleep, enough so that by the time 1 to 3 in the morning rolls around, our liver can detoxify our blood efficiently. Unfortunately, this is a time of night that a lot of people are either just going to sleep by 1 o'clock or they're waking up. A lot of people wake up around 2 or 3 in the morning. And that can also be an indication that there's something going on microbially in the body or otherwise, because each hour of the day is associated with the function of an organ system in the body. So when one time of day is particularly problematic for us, like if we're not in our deepest sleep around 2 or 3 a.m., then that's telling us that there may be something going on with our detoxification system and that it needs to have some attention. And so having good bedtime habits and making good sleep, trying to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night a priority, is a pivotal thing that we can do to help cultivate the microbiome. The microbiome responds well to us sleeping during those hours. And the microbiome is most active in the earlier part of the day. So when our melatonin starts to wane around 7 a.m., the microbiome wakes up. And so another thing that we can do to help cultivate our microbiome now is to make sure that we're eating our largest, heaviest meals in the earlier part of the day, and to try and avoid late night snacking and eating. In fact, research shows that anything after 8 o'clock p.m. makes the body more insulin resistant and immediately starts storing glucose as fat. So in the ancient medicine traditions, we should ideally be stopping eating around 5 o'clock, but that's not possible for a lot of people with their schedules. So thinking about not eating after dark is a really good guideline.
And boy, that also helps if people want to lose weight, not eating after dark.
Absolutely.
So, you know, sometimes that's a big motivating factor.
Yes, it is.
So you discussed probiotics very briefly, but let's go more into what people can use in terms of foods and herbs, perhaps, that actually help move things towards a healthier microbiome.
So your microbiome is actually your internal probiotics source. So your microbes are your probiotics. And so what we can do is think about how we feed our microbes so that we're enhancing our beneficial microbes so that they can do more for us. So the microbes that we want to enhance love fiber. They love fiber from grains, from vegetables, from whole fruits, from every kind of plant food. So by increasing the amount or the number of plant foods in our diets, 30 or 35 different plant foods a week, doing that, if you're not anywhere close to it, start off slowly, or you will probably experience some bloating and gas at first because it's an adjustment. Those microbes have to keep up with all the changes that we make, for better or for worse. So when you bring in 30 to 35 plant-based foods a week over time, you're actually creating more diversity in the gut amongst those beneficial microbe types. And that's what we're aiming for. Right now, the definition of a healthy microbe, and this is up for debate amongst researchers, but right now the definition for a healthy microbiome is a more diverse microbiome. And so that means that there is a wide diversity of beneficial microbes, so that if we run into needing to take a medication or we cross time zones and that's something that is not great for the microbiome, if we're doing things, we run into a time of stress in our lives that can be harmful for the microbiome as well, then if we already have this diversity of beneficial microbes present, then our body can take more of a hit to that stressor and recover faster than if we didn't have that set up already. So that's another thing that everyone can do right now, is to start to diversify the plant foods in their diet and consume 30 to 35 plant foods a week.
So that's a pretty simple thing. Just start looking at how much vegetables you're eating. Absolutely. And of course, that's great information for everyone. We're going to take another break right here, Bridget, for our station identification, so people can hear about all the great shows that are here for their listening pleasure. And by the way, they're there 24 hours a day, like your show will be. I will send you a link to the archive so you can embed it or share it. And that's anytime. And there people will have links to your contacts, such as BridgetShea.com and your other Facebook and all those things, if they want to get in touch with you in the future. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Zin. And welcome back to more right here on Natural Alternatives. You can always find us by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. Let us know what you think of the show. We'll take constructive criticism. We mostly get all these, you know, lauding, wonderful remarks, which thank you. We love those as well. And also, you can get in touch and join in on all of our online classes and our on-ground classes, which are starting to be given again, you know, as the world evolves. And so just go to naturalnurse.com calendar and you can find many of those events. Our guest today is Bridget Shea. We're talking about her new book, Cultivating Your Microbiome. And on her website, BridgetShea.com, she has tons of beautiful information. So welcome back, Bridget.
Thank you.
And I love your book. You have so much in here that is really something that you don't just go along with the pack, but you study deeply and you understand the ancient energetic interactions, which are truly important. So I love your little paragraph about, let's talk about smoothies. Let's talk about smoothies.
Okay. So from an ancient medicine perspective, what we want to do first and foremost in our lifestyle is to preserve the digestive power of the gut. And so one of the things that is avoided in general in an Eastern medicine perspective is having no ice or cold drinks in the body. So what we want to do is to eat and consume things that are more the temperature of the body, because we want to be feeding it and also supplementing the heat in that part of the body and the transformational chemicals in that part of the body that actually end up slowing down or getting dulled in the presence of iced foods and drinks. So if we are chronically consuming iced foods and drinks, studies show that what's actually happening is we're slowing down the enzymatic activity in the small intestine, and that over time will impair our absorption of nutrients.
And boy, that's a big thing, because in the United States, at least, you know, it's huge, which is like big glasses of soda with ice.
Exactly.
So what about smoothies, though? Because they're considered more of a health food kind of thing.
They are. And there are a lot. So I talk about this a lot in the book, that there is no bad thing, but foods and drinks need to be consumed in moderation. And so with smoothies, the thing with those is they're consumed on a regular basis. First of all, they're cold or iced. And second of all, they combine so many different things all in one cold iced drink that it's like bombarding the body with too much stuff altogether. In Ayurveda, we talk about food combining principles, and that it's taxing for our digestive fire to properly break down and assimilate certain foods when they're combined with one another. And we consume these foods as a culture on a regular basis. One is fruit and yogurt. Another is fruit and any kind of melon. Another is eggs and cheese. So people like in the bodybuilding industry might be familiar with food combining, but the Ayurvedic principles of food combining go far beyond, and there are much more detailed, and there are more combinations that we try to avoid as a whole on a regular basis. And so with smoothies, what happens is oftentimes these things get combined. We are combining yogurt with fruit. We are adding in powders that have tons of things in them. And not only that, but powder in general is not necessarily a bioavailable food source. It has to be reconstituted and it's been dried, and that can affect the principle of wind in the system or air and make us more dry in the long run.
Right. And that's something that people who are even into various health food type lifestyles, they're very big. And I'll often turn those packages, like you said, of prepackaged all kinds of things mixed together. And in them are sometimes actual toxins, preservatives, right, tons of sugar, which is going to spike your glycemic index,
right,
fruit and vegetables, which don't belong to be eaten together. And there's like, then they wonder why they actually feel worse. Sometimes they do feel better if they're going, let's say, from a pure junk food diet to smoothies.
Right.
Like you said, that'll at least lighten the load, which
right,
makes you feel a little better. But it's really not the best choice when you have deep knowledge of these traditional teachings and really of your own body.
Right. Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing with this book is a lot of stuff that we think of as healthy or as what we should be doing, we actually, by doing that, are ignoring our own sense of inner wisdom and what our body is telling us. By following guidelines on fad diets or what the latest research says about ashwagandha, you know, we're ignoring what our own intelligence is actually trying to tell us. And so in this book, I talk about trying to listen to yourself more and listen to your own sense of common sense and listen to your own body. You know, when you eat something, how does it make you feel? Do you feel more tired after, or do you feel good? Do you feel satiated and energized and peaceful, or do you feel like you need to go take a nap and you're all phlegmy? So just because something, just because mass culture says something is quote unquote good, doesn't necessarily mean it's good for you right now.
That's a wonderful way to put it. Well, I just love your book, Cultivating Your Microbiome, Ayurvedic and Chinese Practices for a Healthy Gut and a Clear Mind with Bridget Shea. Just give our listening audience some words of wisdom and how they can best find out about you.
So I have a website. It's www.bridgetshea.com. And Bridget is spelled like bridge, with two T's and an E at the end. And Shea is like Shea Stadium, S-H-E-A. And you can find me on Facebook at Bridget Shea. I have an author page. My clinic is Ageless Acupuncture. You can find that on Facebook as well. I'm Bridget Shea Books on Instagram. And then on Twitter, I'm Goldilocks Gut.
Where did that come from? That's a cute name.
I talk about that in the book. It's about how when I'm talking about the quality of the intestinal lining, we don't want it too hot, too cold, too oxygenated, lacking in oxygen in some places, too damp, too dry. We want it just right.
Oh.
And so that's the Goldilocks gut.
I love that. That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you, listeners, so much for joining us once again on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We're on live every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And then, of course, podcasts are all the time outside of the limitations of time and space. Quite amazing as our Earth evolves. And thank you so much for joining us once again. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.